Hello and welcome to Wild Business Report on the BBC World Service. I'm Will Bain. Thanks for being back with us. Coming up today, gallium and germanium. Not exactly household names, even in the world of rare earth metals. But today, they're at the epicentre of the latest tremors in global trade. We'll explain why, or try to, and what they're used for in just a moment. Also on the programme today, why illegal gold mining in Ghana is surging.
The land is just there for everybody to just dig and get a piece of gold for his own.
Can you make a living like this?
We are making a good living out of it.
Yeah, plenty more from World Business Report's Ed Butler's reporting from Ghana a little bit later on in the programme, in what is, of course, election week there here on the programme. We're going to start, though, with some news that's broken in the past hour or so. And the president of South Korea, Yoon Suk-yeol, has declared martial law. In an unannounced late-night television address, he says the move is necessary to protect the country from North Korea's communist forces and to eliminate what he called anti-state elements.
친애하는 국민 여러분, 저는 북한 공산
Dear citizens, I hereby declare martial law to protect the Republic of Korea from the threats posed by North Korean communist forces and to eradicate in one sweep the shameless pro-North anti-state forces that are plundering the freedom and happiness of our people and to safeguard the constitutional order of freedom.
Pretty extraordinary pictures coming in from the capital, Seoul, already. Looking up above me at the screens on the BBC News Channel. 25 to 1 in the morning local time there. Thousands of people, by the look of things, gathering outside the National Assembly. We've got a live page running on the BBC website as well that's already showing what look like pretty tense moments between protesters and the police outside the National Assembly there, and also the main opposition party in South Korea has called on its supporters to assemble outside the National Assembly. A lot going on in a story that's moving. In a moment, we'll try and work out some of the market reaction. Of course, some of the biggest companies on the planet are incorporated there and listed on the stock market in the Korean capital, Seoul. But first of all, World Business Report's David Kan is with us. David, a longtime editor at the BBC's Korean service before joining us here on the team. David, thanks for being with us. Just tell us what we know so far, the rationale behind this move by the president.
Well, the president says, you know, it's to deal with the North Korean communist forces, right? But that's a very common word that conservatives use to describe the opposition. So if you listen to the whole speech, it actually talks about how the opposition have tried to pass dozens of impeachments. And also, you know, essentially the president is saying that the opposition is making it impossible to run the country. One of the biggest issue was that on the 29th, so just a few days ago, the opposition party, which is actually has the majority in the parliament, has passed a budget cut, which the ruling party doesn't agree with. The main part of it is that they wanted to get rid of this special activity fund, which does not need agreement by the parliament due to security reasons. Usually it covers president's travels and such. You don't need to show any receipts or anything, but the president essentially tripled it in this administration, tripled the previous governments. So the opposition didn't like that. But obviously the president didn't like that. So he's essentially saying that the opposition party is creating chaos that is almost like a rebellion or an internal civil war.
A lot of politics, as you say, just in terms of those pictures that we're seeing at the moment, those people inside the building that we think is the National Assembly building there in Seoul have all just moved quite dramatically away from the windows in the building there as those crowds continue to gather outside. So a lot of this politics, it seems, David, but what has been the kind of immediate reaction to it from the opposition that you were talking about?
Yeah, it's not just opposition, actually. Even the ruling party, there's members of it who are quite shocked about it. And they're saying that this is something like this shouldn't have happened. So as in Korea, even though the president can declare an executive order of a martial law, the parliament gathers immediately. And if the 50% of the members of the parliament disagree with it, the president has to withdraw it or risk impeachment. So they have asked all the politicians to gather. So that is the political reaction to it. And then there's the people's reaction to it. Obviously, this is people are massively shocked. I've been talking to some of my friends and in Korea, and they're completely shocked. And actually, a lot of them are actually thinking, as you know, South Korea is actually, we are still currently technically at war with North Korea. So people are thinking, did North Korea invade? You know, a lot of people are running home to their houses. As you can see on the screen, you know, obviously there are people who's gathering at the parliament. But a lot of the people, it's an absolute shock. There's even pictures of like tanks like going around the city center. And obviously the business people, they're severely affected. So I actually like spoke with a business owner who makes accessory. He also imports the materials from China and overseas. His name is Dongjun Kang. Have a listen.
I don't know what to say about this martial law incident. How can someone who says he serves the country be so careless in acting on a whim? As a self-employed person, I really think there will be a massive damage to my business. Just from his words, the currency has crashed, and it will seriously affect importing materials. I don't even know where to start with dealing with this news.
As David said, reports of tanks on the street, helicopters on the roof of the parliament building, those people moving from the windows I was mentioning, they are staff of the National Assembly, we understand now, who are still inside the building as well. Fiona Sincotta, senior market analyst at City Index here in London, is our markets guest today here on World Business Report. Fiona, thanks for being with us. And as that businessman that David was speaking to there, Dongjun Kang, was saying, already a reaction on the currency markets here for the Korean currency.
Yes, that's right. So we've seen the Korean won has dropped 2%. It's now trading at its lowest level since the pandemic in 2021. That's been a very sharp sell-off there against the US dollar. And then we're also seeing it reflected in other currencies. For example, the Japanese yen in the region is also a safe haven. So we've seen the yen is actually trading now at a six-week high. There are other factors behind that as well. But yes, we've seen it also being reflected in the stock markets as well. I mean, the actual stock market isn't open in South Korea at the moment. But for example, exchange traded funds that buy stocks from South Korea that are listed on the US, they are open and trading at the moment. And they're down around 5% as the markets just really dislike this uncertainty.
Yeah, absolutely. And as David said, you know, it is around the budget. So in that sense, there's an economic element to all of this, as what is clearly quite a political story as well, but also some of the world's biggest companies, Hyundai Motors, Samsung Electronics, of course, incorporated there, stock market listed there, their staff presumably eventually, potentially affected by a call for martial law, Fiona.
Yeah, completely. I mean, exactly how it's going to play out, we don't know. But I mean, what we do know is, yes, this is bad news for these massive companies, global companies. You know, these are not just domestic companies that we're talking about here. So, you know, how they're going to be able to manage the martial law, how they're going to be able to continue operating, what that continuum of operation looks like, that all remains to be seen.
Yeah, those questions to come in the next few hours, I'm sure, as I say, only 20 to 1 in the morning, local time in Seoul. So I'm sure stay with the World Service throughout the next few hours for what is a developing story, and anything else that moves on that story, we'll of course try and get David back or bring you up to date with it here on World Business Report. David Kan there from our team here on WBR. Fiona Sincotta staying with us throughout the programme here on World Business Report, where we're going to take you to China now, because the government has banned shipments to the United States of several minerals and metals used in semiconductor manufacturing and military applications. Comes a day after the Biden administration curbed exports to 140 companies involved in China's semiconductor industry, the latest in a kind of tit for tat in the latest early stages, the foothills perhaps of yet another kind of ramping up of the trade war perhaps. Caroline Messica is the strategic markets editor, technology metals at the commodity insights company Fast Markets. Caroline, thanks for being with us on World Business Report.
Oh, thanks for inviting me.
I teed this up a little bit earlier on. Germanium and gallium, I don't want to be unfair to them, but not exactly household names even in their own areas. So just explain a bit about them and what they're used for.
Sure. Well, no, you say that, but you do use them every day and you're in fact surrounded by them. If you're listening to this on the internet, there's germanium in the fiber optic cable. Your smartphone has a little chip with gallium in it, which helps it to connect to the internet. So they really are internet metals. They really are making modern economies work.
Absolutely. And so, and why they've become part of all of this political route, this trade route. Just explain their use in semiconductors in particular. As you say, they're sort of the coating that goes around some of the bits within a semiconductor, right?
No, there are chips made out of gallium itself. There's right. gallium arsenide. There's a whole new generation of semiconductor materials, and there's gallium arsenide, which has been around for a while, but there are new ones as well. And one of the things this does is it makes it more expensive, and it takes longer to develop these new materials and get them widely used.
And what are they going into?
5G radar systems for the towers for 5G, because you're sending an awful lot more data than you are with 4G. So the new materials were designed specifically for 5G.
Really interesting. I vaguely remember from when these were first talked about as something that China had put on the table a couple of years ago as something that might be part of tariffs or restrictions. That is the issue, that in the United States and Europe, we've outsourced a lot of the kind of refining of these, right? That they are found in the ground in other parts of the world, although there is a lot of it in China. But the big issue here is actually that China has the vast majority of the sort of capacity that turns them into the kind of finished, usable product.
That's absolutely the case. And one of the things that makes it difficult for these elements in particular is that they are so critical, you absolutely have to have them. But the volumes that you need are quite small. So from a mining perspective, and if you don't need, you know, thousands or hundreds of thousands of tons, it's harder to make an economic case for getting them out of the ground. And if the price isn't very high, then there's no case at all for getting them out of the ground. So it's a question of, we need it, but the will to get it out of the ground and process it has not been there.
So in terms of responses, that sounds, I mean, no, that's not necessarily your field, but it sounds like it's difficult, it's complicated in terms of how the United States, Europe, others might try to respond.
Well, there are solutions. I mean, it depends who you ask, like everything else. I mean, I was talking to someone this morning who was complaining. He was saying, well, look, if they've got $250 billion for the CHIPS Act, and what, $49 billion for the European Chips Act, and even the UK is spending $1 billion on semiconductor. They're really not looking down the other end of the pipe.
Really interesting. We'll definitely get you back on all of this, I think. Again, thanks so much for explaining that so clearly, Caroline. Caroline Messiger there, Strategic Markets Editor, Technology and Metals at the Commodity Insights Company, Fast Markets. Let's get a quick thought from Fiona on all of that. I mean, away from the geopolitics that's going on with the South Korean story we were just talking about, Fiona, this, yet another kind of sort of twisting of the ratcheting up of the trade war.
It does. It definitely feels like, you know, after a bit of an absence of too many headlines surrounding trade wars, it does feel like it's back with a bang, and Trump hasn't even taken office officially yet. So, you know, I think there is the sort of a slightly cautious mood in the markets today because of the sort of increased tensions that we're seeing, this idea of tit for tat. It just really takes us back to the first Trump administration, and that wasn't necessarily good news as far as the markets were concerned. But at the moment, they seem to be holding up okay.
Well, we'll take another look at the markets themselves in a moment with Fiona. But for now, Fiona, thanks so much. You're with World Business Report on the BBC World Service. The Star Spangled Banner there, played by the military band of Angola in the capital, Luanda, earlier Tuesday, as President Biden became the first sitting US president to visit the country on what is his first and most likely last visit to sub-Saharan Africa as president. And he was in something of a celebratory mood.
You've heard me say it before, Mr. President. The United States is all in on Africa, all in on Angola. We've already, my administration alone, has invested over $3 billion in Angola thus far. The future of the world is here in Africa.
Molly Fee is the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. She's traveling with the president and told our Newsday program on the World Service more about the importance of the trip.
What we hear from Africans is that they need investment in infrastructure. They need economic growth. They need jobs. And agricultural security remains a critical factor. There's also a lot of interest in clean energy. So we started with an anchor, which is a railroad. It will be running from Zambia through DRC to Angola. It will have a major impact in and of itself by speeding up transport, reducing costs, and making it possible for more products to move to market. But it's also been an anchor for us to do more on renewable energy, on digital connectivity, and on this all-important agricultural development. So it's not just, as in the past, a way to move stuff out of Africa. It will open up access to arable land, and it will bolster the supply chain for critical energy minerals that are so important to the clean energy market.
Molly Fee there, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs. And that rail line she was talking about is a $10 billion revival of a 100-year-old 1,300-kilometer line that, as she said, would link the Democratic Republic of Congo, Zambia and Angola, known as the Lobito Corridor, to the port of Lobito on the Angolan Atlantic Ocean coast. And the Zambian development economist Trevor Samumba worked on the feasibility study for one of the forerunners of what is now that project. And Trevor joins us live. Trevor, great to have you back on the program. Thanks for being back with us on World Business Report.
Yeah, it's great to be back. It's been a while.
You guys have
been ignoring me.
Not at all. Always great to have you on. And tell us then, not a brand new idea, this project. So perhaps talk about your feasibility study and how we've got to where we are today with the rail line, first of all, and then we'll talk about some of the other investment Molly Fee was talking about in a moment.
Yes, no, definitely not new, but very important milestone, especially in terms of relations between the U.S. and Africa. The Lobito Rail has been there from the time of history. It was known as the Benguela Railway. So the original railway runs from the port of Lobito all the way through Luao into DRC, into Dilolo. So this Benguela Rail is the shortest route, actually, for Zambia, especially, to get to the sea. However, because of past wars in Angola and the liberation wars, this rail fell into disrepair. But now we have an opportunity to revive it. There's always been a project, which is private sector-led, known as the Northwest Rail Project, which is to connect the copper belt of Zambia into the Katanga region, and then connecting into the rail. So that is the rail that the lady that was on before was talking about, the link with Zambia. Mm. But in terms of the link between DRC and Angola, it's already there. The rail is already there.
And Katanga, people may or may not be familiar, very important in terms of things like cobalt, which of course is extremely important. The mines for cobalt there for in terms of the kind of energy transition, things going into electric vehicle batteries, hence the interest in it. What do you make of the revived project then, Trevor? Clearly, fairly obvious what President Biden, the United States, want out of it. What about those three African countries we've listed? What do they get out of it?
Yes, and that is very important. And I was happy to hear the talk about agricultural development. You know, we need to look at that corridor, not just for the critical minerals. Zambia, the DRC are the biggest producers of copper, cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and all these are critical strategic minerals. We know that Europe, America wants access to these minerals. Fine. But we need to go beyond just primary extraction. We need to look at industrialization. We need to look at setting up engineering companies, metal fabrication within Angola, Zambia, the DRC, to service the rail, but also to service the corridor that will come up. There's a huge vast of land in that whole corridor that can be utilized for development.
And briefly, Trevor, is that the money where the mouth is moment with all of this? You know, this is, again, we've talked a lot about US-China here, competition. This is a little bit about that as well, isn't it? And China has put its money where its mouth is. It has built airports, roads, made investment with partners in the African continent. Is it time for Europe and America to kind of show that too?
Yes, it's time for Europe and America to show that, because China already has a big rail, Tanzania-Zambia Railway, which has been developed, and they've announced a $1 billion investment to expand it and modernize it. So really, the U.S. needs to put their money where their mouth is, and we hope that Mr. Trump, the new president of the U.S., will look at Africa in much better positive ways, because there is an opportunity here for American companies.
Trevor, and business. Let's not make it so long next time, though at least we've managed to avoid having to talk to you in the past couple of years about Arsenal's misses out on the title races there. Trevor Simumba, development economist from Zambia, speaking to us there. Great as always to have your time. Well, let's return quickly to Fiona Sincosta, senior market analyst at City Index. And Fiona, a story we thought was going to be a bit higher up this programme earlier on today was the regulator here in London, where you are, the FCA, the Financial Conduct Authority, seeming in an interview with the Financial Times to clear the way for Shein, the Chinese fashion giant, to finally find somewhere to list its shares.
Yes, that's right. So this is this global e-commerce platform, fast fashion retailer, founded in China back in 2008, and it's grown to be one of the largest retailers with a valuation of up to $50 billion ahead of its IPO. But as you mentioned, it has faced controversy over sort of sweatshop concerns and child labour. And that was something that was alluded to by the FCA. Now, they did say that the decisions whether they allow companies to list on the UK are based only on their disclosures and not every aspect of their corporate behaviour.
Yeah.
But it's seems to have the all clear.
Absolutely. And something, obviously, as we've heard from the company many times on the programme, that they deny and say they work with all the authorities to make sure they have the best work practices that fit with all the laws where they work around the world. Fascinating. Sure, something we'll talk again about. Fiona, thanks as always for your time. You're with World Business Report on the BBC World Service. And let's take you back to Ghana, because the polls closed on Saturday amid what experts expect to be a pretty tight election. And the backdrop is also one of the worst environmental threats that the country has faced in decades, apparently, all linked to illegal gold mining, as Ed Butler has been finding out for our BBC Business Daily programme.
OK, I'm out in the northern region, stepped off the road into an open field. There's a series of trenches here. They've just been dug. And there are some guys, plain as day, looking for gold.
You don't have a license for this?
No.
You don't? Is that a problem?
The land is just there for everybody to just dig and get a piece of gold for his own.
Can you make a living like this?
We are making living out of it.
Estimates of the scale of illegal gold mining in Ghana these days vary. The practice has been around for decades, but lately it seems to have been spreading into protected areas as well, overrunning farms and affecting the country's freshwater bodies. Today, galamse, which simply means gather and sell in the local language, well, it accounts for more than a third of the country's annual gold output, they reckon. And Ghana is already the world's sixth largest gold producer. As many as 1 million people seek their living from illegal mining. The problems galamse is causing became a serious political issue this year when it was revealed that the public utility could no longer provide clean tap water for Ghanaians using their existing chemicals. Such was the scale of the pollution in the rivers. Protesters, including church leaders and the unions, took to the streets of the capital.
It doesn't make any sense for us to be in a country where the police are being poisoned, everybody, the civilians are being poisoned.
This is a life or death matter, and every Ghanaian person needs to treat it as such. We have a fundamental problem and it needs to be fixed.
The long-term cost may be more than just environmental. Ghana's foreign earnings depend heavily on its agriculture, export crops like cocoa and cashews. But farmers say that an increasingly lawless mining sector means that many of them are being driven off their land.
They would induce the farmers with money, $10,000.
Edward Carraway is a leader of the National Farmers Union.
What do they do when they don't take the money?
So what they just simply do is they make it impossible for you to enter your farm.
And what? How do they do that?
They just simply flood your farm with the dirty water. You know, that dirty water is poisonous. It destroys the crop. And besides that, when they become desperate and you are not giving in, they use violence because they have now acquired arms, illegal arms as well. They corrupt the political system there. And that is the reason why it's not being stopped.
Farmers Union leader Edward Carraway echoing the widely held belief that the practice is being bankrolled by senior figures in business and in government. It's a claim that at election time, opposition MPs like the NDC's Sam George are keen to highlight.
Galamsey is Ghana's version of the cocaine cartels of Colombia. It's a cartel made up of politicians, chiefs, and largely Chinese nationals. It must be dealt with forcefully and brutally. You cannot continue to have a country where the political class are conniving with traditional authority for their personal gain to destroy the water safety of the entire 33 million Ghanaians.
Well, the government claims that progress is being made to stamp out illegal mining. But Fatoumata Aboubakar, she's the Minister for Information, she says that the opposition's get-tough approach isn't going to work when so many Ghanaians depend on some form of small-scale mining for their livelihood.
What the government is doing right now is that they are moving people from illegal small-scale mining into community mining schemes. And when you are doing that, people are able to keep their livelihoods but still do the surface mining sustainably.
Are leading members of the government profiting from illegal mining?
Not that I know of. I am a leading member of the government. I am a minister.
I'm not accusing you personally.
No. I'm saying, you know, I don't have any business in mining. I don't have any concession. And it doesn't even matter if I know somebody. We need to do the right thing. And that is what we are committed to doing.
Ed Butler reporting from Ghana. Then, and if you've missed either of Ed's fascinating reports, Business Daily is the place to go wherever you get your podcast from. Before we leave you here on World Business Report, let's just round up the latest scenes live from the South Korean capital, Seoul. Those are crowds outside the National Assembly building there. Special forces trying to enter that after the president declared martial law. We'll have plenty more of that on the World Service. Stay with us throughout the night.